Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's podcast. With us today is Shelley Bloom, Director of Legislative Awareness and Training, and today's topic will be on the July 2018 healthcare reform updates. So, Shelley, July 31st is coming up very soon. What needs to be filed?
Well, July 31st definitely means the PCORI filing. PCORI is the Patient-Centered Outcomes Research Institute fee. And that fee was started on October 1st of 2012, and you file at the end of your plan year. It started out as a dollar per person that participated in your health plan, and if you are fully insured, the insurance carrier pays this for you. It's built into your rate. If you're self-funded or level-funded, and a lot more of those types of plans are popular for small groups, then you have to do the PCORI filing on your own. In addition to health insurance, self-funded or level-funded, you also have to file if you have a health reimbursement arrangement. So if I'm insured with a carrier and it's fully insured, but I have an HRA, I have to file the PCORI for that HRA. The other part that a lot of people don't think about is the flexible spending account. So if your employer contributes $500 or more to your flexible spending account, then the employer has to file a PCORI for that flexible spending account. So the PCORI fees are due 7/31, and we sent out a bulletin on that. And you know, if you need a copy of the bulletin, make sure you check with your account manager or account executive, and they can send you a copy of that bulletin to know who pays what, because some of the people filing this year will pay $2.26. Others will pay $2.39. It just depends on when your plan began and ended. And the other one that's very important right now is ERISA for the 5500. If your plan renewed January, then you have to file the 5500 for the prior year by July 31st. If your plan renewed other than January, if it renewed in February, then you have to file by the end of August. So it's 7 months after your renewal date is when you actually file the 5500. And the important thing, the penalties have increased for not filing the 5500. So the penalty is $2,140 per person per day if you fail to file that 5500. Now you can raise your hand and say, sorry, I forgot, and they will reduce the penalty amount, but you still will have a penalty. So it's important that if you just went over 100 participants in the prior year, then you are required to file that 5500.
Great. Thank you. Now, as always, we need to talk about taxes. So what is important to know right now for 2018, and what is on the horizon for 2019?
Yes, taxes are something that's definitely in the news every day. I think the most important one, as we think about group insurance and individual insurance rates that have already been formulated for a lot of states, not everyone, but in 2018, the HIT tax, the health insurer fee or tax, was included in everyone's rate for 2018, but in 2019, President Trump took that away in the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. So conceivably, we should see about a 3 to 4% decrease in the rates for 2019, because we don't have that tax. However, you know, with all the other things that are going on, and one of those other things I wanted to bring up is the risk adjustments. Last week, President Trump and Seema Verma talked about risk adjustments, and they put a freeze on those because there were two different courts in two different states that said that the risk adjustments were not valid and should not be paid out. Basically, what's happening with that is there are some insurance carriers that have had really good luck with their experience. They haven't had a lot of high-cost claimants, so they've actually made money. And then there's others that didn't have such good years, and so they actually lost money. And these risk adjustments are basically taking from those who had a surplus and giving to those who had bad luck with their claims. So things kind of even out, and we're talking about $10 billion roughly that changed hands. And right now there is a freeze on that. We don't know if that freeze will come off before we get to the November 1st open enrollment, and we assume that that's the date it'll be. We don't even know that yet. and I'm talking about open enrollment for the marketplace or exchange for individual plans, but those risk adjustments could greatly affect the rating for individual and small group because of that freeze on those risk adjustments.
Thank you. Also in the news is the employer mandate. Can you update us on what large employers need to do?
Employer mandate has a lot of moving pieces. Yes, you have read in the news recently that Congress has brought up a couple different bills where they're talking about eliminating the employer mandate penalty. And just a refresher for those of you who don't remember, employer mandate covers any employer group that has 50 or more full-time and full-time equivalent employees. You're required to offer coverage that is minimum value and affordable to all your full-time employees or be subject to a penalty. And we have an A penalty and a B penalty, or a sledgehammer and a tack hammer penalty. They started out as $2,000 and $3,000, but the A penalty or the sledgehammer penalty says if I'm a large employer and I don't offer coverage to anybody, I get the first 30 free, but everybody after that I'm going to pay a penalty on, and I only need one person to go to the exchange and get a tax credit or subsidy to trigger that penalty for all the rest of the employees. The B penalty is a little bit softer. It's a little more expensive, but it's only charged if an employer has a couple people that the insurance coverage isn't affordable for. Then those people go to the exchange, get a tax credit or subsidy. The employer only owes for those couple people that go to the exchange and get a tax credit or subsidy. So some of the bills that Congress is talking about is taking away the penalty altogether. Some of them are saying, well, individual mandate is zeroed out for 2019, meaning you have to have insurance, but there's no penalty if you don't. So a lot of people are going to go without insurance. And people are looking at that saying, well, if we're not going to enforce the individual mandate, then why are we having the employer mandate? Because, you know, it's all based on people going to the exchange and getting that tax credit. Right now, none of those have gotten out of committee to even be voted on by the full House, let alone to go to the Senate. Will they happen? You know, I don't know about that. The other part I wanted to talk about with employer mandate is we've now gone through 7 months. If you renewed in January, you've gone through January through July. You can look backward, and if you weren't 50 last year, but you think you're getting close this year, it's a good time to look at these 7 months and say, what happened? Was I over 50, under 50? If you're not sure how to measure, talk to your account manager or your account executive and figure out what you need to do. The affordability amount for this year is 9.56%. For next year, 2019, it goes to 9.86%. So employers will have a little bit more money that they can ask employees to pay for, a little bit more money to deal with there. And then the last thing related to employer mandate is those letter 226Js, which is the penalty for the 2015 year. They're still coming out in waves. Roughly every 20 to 30 days, we see a new group of people who have a penalty because they didn't do something that they were supposed to do in 2015. But remember that as soon as we get done with 2015, they'll probably start right in with the 2016 and the 2017 year. So it's important to be on the lookout. If you get one of those letter 226J penalties, contact your broker, your account manager, your account executive, and ask what you can do with it, because potentially we can give you some help with that.
Now, with HRAs, can you update us on what is an HRA and how does it work?
I think you're talking about the qualified small employer HRAs?
Yes, exactly.
Okay. So with a qualified small employer HRA, these have been around all of last year, but they haven't been really popular. And what these are is if you are a small employer, which means you have fewer than 50 employees, and you do not offer any group insurance right now, and you haven't offered it within the last 6 months, then you can allow your employees to go to the exchange or marketplace to purchase an individual plan. Then you set up a health reimbursement arrangement where you are able to reimburse them for the cost of their individual plan. So So you have to get proof that they have it, and then you can reimburse them, and you can reimburse them up to $5,050 for single or $10,250 for family for the year. You have to give them a notice 90 days prior that you're doing this. There's a bunch of other things that you have to do. But this is one of the few ways that as an employer, you are able to reimburse the employee for the cost of health insurance.
So, with association health plans, once again, another hot topic in the news a lot, what is old and what is new?
Well, yes, you are absolutely right that association health plans continue to be in the news. And I just wanted to go over again that we still have the old way of doing association health plans. And as a reminder to everyone, with the old association health plans, insurance carriers decide what plans they want to offer to an association. There might be 3 or 4 or 5 or 6. They offer those to associations. And within that association, let's say we've got 72 employer groups. Each one of those employer groups would be rated individually for that association health plan in the old way. So you might be a group of 17, I have a group of 53, the next person has a group of 102. So we're each rated on the size of our group within these plans that the carrier has chosen for us. Well, think about this new way of doing association health plans as kind of a 180, where in this way, an association decides that, yes, we want to offer group health insurance. They also have to have another purpose, a bona fide reason for existing beyond the purchase of health insurance. So it might be offering education or training or travel, or you know, they can figure out what it is. But once that association decides they want to offer coverage, then they look for a carrier or carriers that would provide the coverage for them. So you go to that carrier and say, we are an association of 1,000 or 1,500. Here's what we do. And remember that with these association health plans, you can get together based on similar interests. We're all realtors. We're all farmers. We're all fishermen, whatever it might be. Or you can get together because you are in a certain metro area and you want to offer coverage to people within certain parts of the metro area, or you can even do it multi-state. But you set the parameters as the association, and then you go looking for somebody that's going to provide the insurance that you want. We've got staggered effective dates, so the first effective date is in September, and those are for fully insured plans only. Then in January, if you currently have an association health plan, you can move to the new way of doing things by January 1. The final date is April 1, and those are for newly formed associations that want to do self-funding. Now, the other part that's really different from old to new is the old way, very rarely did those associations allow sole proprietors or partners without any common law employees to participate in their associations. Or if you were paid by 1099 from a number of companies because you were a subcontractor, under this new way of doing things, all of those people are now eligible to participate in an association if the association sets the rules and allows them to do it. So some changes, some things that associations have to think about. Do we want to be fully insured? Do we want to be self-funded? How are we going to set up our rules? And are there insurance carriers in my state or in multiple states if I'm a multiple state association that might possibly offer me coverage? So lots to think about there. You want to work within your association, potentially with your broker, with an insurance carrier that can advise you. But remember, the insurance carrier is not creating all of this. It's the association that has to say what we want. Then they go to a carrier to look for rates. The other thing that's very important related to associations is every state has very specific rules about how they're going to look at and regulate association health plans, which are also known as MEWAs, Multiple Employer Welfare Arrangements. So some states, such as California, have come out and said, we are not allowing any new plans to be written under the new rules of association. So right now, nothing can happen. New York, along with Massachusetts, said, we don't like the new rules, we're going to bring a lawsuit. As of today, that lawsuit hasn't appeared yet. So if and when it does, we'll certainly let everyone know. It appears, though, that New York may not be very friendly to this, so we could see some new laws or rules that would eliminate or reduce the amount of associations you could have. Other states that we work with, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Delaware, up to this point haven't said much, but remember, with those staggered effective dates and with the newly formed self-funded coming in April, we're probably going to see more of these state laws that will happen towards the end of this year and into next year. And the other big thing I wanted to talk about with association health plans is the old way of doing it. I said we could each have different employer group sizes and we're rated on the size of our employer. With the new ones, we're all thrown into one big plan. So we're rated as one plan with 800, 1,000, 1,500 people, as opposed to each one separately on their own. So lots to think about. Again, talk with your broker if you have any questions or concerns related to association health plans.
Great. Thank you, Shelley. Everyone, thank you for listening. Also, I would like to make the following disclaimer before we end. This podcast is designed to highlight various employee benefit matters of general interest to our listeners. It is not intended to interpret laws or regulations or to address specific client situations. You should not act or rely on any information contained herein without seeking the advice of an attorney or tax professional. So thank you, Shelley, and we hope you found this podcast helpful and informative. If you have any questions, please contact your account manager or salesperson.